Hello everyone. My name is Vincent Paturé. I'm working at Entur together with Thomas. I work mainly on Open Trip Planner development and on the data import pipeline as well. So I will just make a small presentation of Entur responsibilities. That's something that was discussed probably already yesterday. Just to put that in context, Entur collect, validate, and publish all transit data in Norway. And it also provide a national journey planner service implemented with OTP. At Entur, we have a strong commitment to open data, open services, open source, open standards. On this presentation, we are going to illustrate how we use these principles to develop the whole pipeline that leads into OTP deployment. There is really two parts in this presentation. So the first part, I will present how we integrate multiple data feeds into OTP. And the second part, Thomas will focus on the rollout, the deployment of new versions of it, of OTP in production. And we'll see that data and code is very much interrelated in OTP. So there are some challenges when you deploy OTP, when you change versions, and you want to make sure that, in particular, the graph data is compatible. So let's get started. This is the big picture, something we have seen yesterday as well, I guess. I will not dig into the details. There are like three main lanes to import data into OTP. The first one is the national stop register. We talked about that earlier. This is a central database, national database. Entur hosts it, but doesn't manage the data. So the management is done by the PTA and the PTO for their own area of responsibility. These are manual edits, and they are done through a GUI, a web interface. So you can just log in the application and update the coordinates of a stop, for instance, or create or remove existing stops. This is fed into OTP through a NetEx export that is done twice a day. So we have like relatively fresh data into the journey planner. So that's the first lane. The second one, and I will spend more time on this one, is how we import timetable data, so scheduled data, into OTP. So as an input, we have planning systems. And in Norway, that's about 60 fields. So quite a lot of data sets to import into the system. At the other end, we are the users. And OTP is the gateway to provide the services for journey planning. What do we do in this lane, in this timetable import lane? First, the scope, as I said, is all Norway. This is required by law, so all operators in Norway are required to provide us the data. So we don't have to chase them, they have to provide it to us. We have a little bit more than Norway, actually. So we have started to import as well cross-border lines, so we're Sweden. And as far as time is concerned, we receive data like 4 months in advance. That's also a requirement by law. The data format is NetEx only. So we use to import as well GTFS data. But as of today, all our data providers have switched to NetEx. So that's only NetEx, and that's also the Nordic NetEx profile. The process is quite simple. So each operator has to upload their own datasets. into our platform. What do we want to achieve with this import pipeline? So the main thing, of course, is data quality. We want to identify and reject data sets that are problematic, that do not follow the business rules, validation rules we have put in place. And we want to do that selectively. It means that we want to block only that data set without blocking the others. So that OTP, so the journey planner, still receives updates from the other data sets. The data quality is driven by a short feedback loop. We want to give the data providers the possibility to review their data, find their mistakes, and fix them as soon as possible. So to do that, we provide validation reports that pinpoints the mistakes or errors in the dataset. Another goal is, of course, short time to publication. So it's important that when we receive a data set, it's validated and published as soon as possible. Of course, there is still like a delay between the time we receive the data set and the time it's available in OTP. Of course, real-time data update is support to merge this gap. But still, it's important to import as fast as possible. Last thing, important as well, versioning. So we want to keep track of previous versions because one dataset can contain mistakes. So we want to be able to roll back to the previous version, for instance. And there are also some requirements to store for a certain time older versions, also for our own purpose for statistics and analytics. If I split the pipeline in four steps, the first step will be to import data, then to validate it, and then to transform it and publish it. So step by step, the import channels available are first, a web interface to the operator portal. It's a very simple interface where you can upload files, basically. And you get also like real-time status for the import process. So you see basically if your dataset has been accepted or rejected. Give access as well to the validation reports. Another options that some of our providers have started to use is the REST API. So for a deeper integration with their own systems, they can basically upload directly the dataset through a backend service and also retrieve a real-time status update for the import process. This is just a small example of a pipeline, starting from the left where we import the file, and the last step to the right is basically deployment to OTP. And all the steps basically are import and validation and publication. So that's something that is available for every provider, so they have like direct access to this information. Next step, the one that takes the most time actually, is the validation itself. So as I said before, we validate against the Nordic NETEX profile. We reject invalid datasets and we provide validation reports. So how do we do that? It's a multi-stage process. First, the simplest superficial checks on file size, file format. We basically check that it's actually NETEX that we receive. Then a second step is the XML schema validation, and that takes about 80% of the time. So schema validation is very expensive. both in terms of time, so CPU time, and memory. So that's the heaviest step in the process. Once we are sure that the file we received is actually a valid NetEx file, we start to do like more fine-grained validations. First step is to check that all the mandatory fields are present, so according to the NetEx profile, or forbidden elements are not present. So there are quite a lot of such checks, and they are quite simple to implement as well. And that covers a lot of mistakes that we see in production data, for instance. The next level is like a higher level of validation rules. Not so much about the type of elements we retrieve, but we check that it's data that is sensible. We check that the speed is likely to be matching the transport mode, for instance. And we check that the distance between stops is also something that matches the transport mode. One step further, we validate rules across lines. So a good example is interchanges. You make sure that when an interchange connects two lines, it's actually technically possible to do it because of the distance between the stops or the time and so on. We want to implement a fail-fast validation, and that's something that is different compared to the strategy that is implemented in OTP. So in OTP, we want to drop invalid data. We don't want to block the graph building. That's important because when you provide a service for the whole country, you don't want to have like one invalid data set compromising the whole system. So we are quite lenient in this way. We just ignore data that is not valid. In the pipeline itself, we are much more restrictive. So if there is a blocking error, then we would reject the whole dataset. We have like a ranking for the severity of validation issues from info, warning, error to critical, and critical on error would block the deployment of the dataset. More technically speaking, as I said before, validation is time consuming, and we have quite a lot of data sets to validate. We need to have like a way to speed up the process. And here the profile, the Nordic NetEx profile, helps us by mandating a specific structure for a NetEx archive. So we have a NetEx line per file, and we have optionally a common file that share the entities that are common to all lines, typically stop data, for instance. So this allows us to implement parallel processing for the line files, and that speeds up to 200% the speed of validation. One last important thing to mention about validation is that if your dataset is valid today, it doesn't mean it's valid tomorrow. We validate against reference data, more importantly against the stop place register. It is possible that a stop is modified or deleted after publication of a given dataset, so every day we revalidate datasets to make sure they are still valid. Example of a validation report. So basically when one report is rejected, you can click on the report itself and get some information about what is missing. which part of the NetX, the XML file is impacted, and the ID that is concerned with this rule. So we can dig into the file to find what is missing. How do we implement that technically? So we have in an open source library, a Java library available on GitHub, NetX Validator Java. This implements the rules. And on top of that, we have also developed a Kubernetes component, so a cloud ready component that we deploy on Google Cloud and that can be scaled up depending on the load. So currently in production, we have from 2 to 10 instances of the validator running in parallel. Once the validation is performed, there is still one step before publication. So we mentioned earlier that N2 is not responsible for fixing the data if there is an issue. So we don't fix invalid data. But there are still a limited number of transformations that we want to implement just to simplify the work for the data consumers. So one thing that we do first is time filtering. Datasets are published every week or every 2 weeks. They may contain all service journeys or all trips. We want to remove them to make the dataset a bit lighter to process for data consumers. So we have a daily routine to reprocess the dataset and remove expired data. Another thing we remove is sensitive data or private data that is not meant to be published on the internet. So there are two parts in NetX. One is purely passenger information. Other parts are more used for scheduling or operating purpose. And this one should not be published on the internet. So we remove them before publication. And the last thing is data enrichment. Again, very limited things are done in this step. We are not supposed to add more data, but at least the service links, so basically the trip geometries, are sometimes missing because our data providers do not have the software to produce them. So as a backup, if they are missing, we can produce them from OSM data. Last step in the pre-publication phase is to verify that after our post-processing, the dataset is still valid. There is a possibility that we introduce bugs in the system, so we make sure that what we actually publish on the internet is still valid according to the profile. Once we have passed all this step, we know that the dataset is valid, ready to be published. We publish it on the internet as open data. One export per feed, and on top of that, one export that aggregates all data for all Norway. And that's this dataset that is the input data for OTP. So OTP will read this dataset combined with the stop definitions for all stops in Norway. We do this process about 20 times a day. So there are quite a bit of redeployment in production. So as I said, this is available as open source. There is a website where you can download every dataset, both in NetX and GTFS.
Sorry, what is that GTFS basic thing?
Yeah, so there are two versions for the GTFS export. One contains the basic route types, and the other one uses the extended version. So at some point, we were exporting data to Google, and Google did not accept, I think, the extended types. So we had to provide both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we not exporting to Google anymore?
No, that's the other way around. So at some point, they were convinced that we were producing good enough GTFS, and they were basically they started to upload, to download our own GTFS. Okay. So instead of pushing, they're basically pulling from us. But they're still using our data. Some words about graph building, but Thomas will give you more details later. We trigger a new graph build after each publication of an aggregated NetX export. The transit graph takes about 20 minutes to build, and we do that like 20 times a day, more or less. To speed up the graph build process, we pre-build the static part of the graph, which is the street network, once a day by extracting OSM data and combining OSM data with the elevation data that we that is published by the Norwegian Mapping Authority. So when you build the transit graph on top of the street graph, you can build it much faster. Currently, we build the graph in about 20 minutes. Once the graph is available, we trigger the redeployment in production. As I said before, OTP is deployed as a service in Google Cloud, and we are currently running about 100 instances. With a rollout deployment of 20% at a time, it means in 15 minutes, we have redeployed the whole system. So all together, if I take the biggest data set we receive, which is Ruiter, so the Oslo area, the whole process takes about 1.5 hours. So we're trying to work on improving the pipeline to reduce even more the time to publication. So one way to achieve that is to replace our old system, which is quite monolithic, by a group of microservices, more focused on the task, to provide faster time to publication. Another area of development currently is the validator itself. So we are practically done with implementing the rules. We need to publish them in the library itself. What we want to do ultimately is to be able to integrate and validate datasets from other countries, so starting from Sweden in the short term. I'm talking briefly about the other lanes important in OTP. There is the real time. Some Thomas already mentioned this morning. We have a hub that combines all the feeds together. We receive data according to the Siri profile, and we provide extensive validation features on reporting on this part. The latest addition in the data feeds is the micro-mobility hub, where we combine micro-mobility actors in Norway, so like e-scooters, bicycles, and carpooling. This is done through pool channel with an update frequency of 10 seconds. So that's also quite a lot of data to process. The hub in front of it helps a bit for the configuration. That's it for my part. So Thomas will now continue more in details about how we deploy OTP in production, how we build the graph.
Yeah. I think I will switch because I'm planning to demo and then not sure if I can use your mouse.
Yeah.
Okay, so this will be a bit technical. This is about, so now we have seen how the data pipeline works, but in parallel with the data pipeline, there is also the rollout of new versions of OTP. And I guess the main thing here is that some versions of OTP are compatible with each other and some versions are not. And in OTP, there is a special version number for this called the serialization version ID. So at the moment, we are in the process of migrating our pipeline of rolling out OTP over to GitHub. But at the moment, we are building the new release in GitHub. That's the first step. And then we make a Docker image. That's the second step. Those two are done now in a workflow in GitHub. And then we use Hardness to build the graphs and roll out the OTP journey planner. So you will see me talk about OTP graph builder and OTP journey planner. It is really OTP. It's just the nodes that we have in our cloud that we label with graph builder and journey planner because they do only that. So the cluster of journey planners, as Vincent said, it's a large cluster of many nodes, and then the graph builders are just a few nodes. So this pipeline in Hardness, we have one pipeline in the three environments that we have. We have the dev, test, and production environment. There's different ways of setting that up, but that's what we have. Okay, so this is how it looks in Hardness. So as I mentioned, there is this serialization version number. And if the serialization version number is different between two versions of OTP, it means that the old serialized graph in OTP cannot be loaded into the new version of OTP. So you need to build two different graphs. The whole process here, so when we are all, let's assume we don't have, it's the same serialization version number between two versions of OTP, then we can roll out, first in the dev environment, we will roll out the graph builder. If it's a success, then we start rolling out the journey planner. And this is before any graphs are built. So there is no graphs built. There will be starting a job building new graphs immediately, but we don't wait for that. We roll out the journey planner. Then we stop and we wait for a manual approval and then we roll out in the test environment and the same thing happens. If there is a change in this serialization version number or the graphs are doesn't match, the journey planner in dev will fail. So there are different things we can do about that. I will come back to that. But if not, if everything is green, we can roll out all the way to production. For the test environment and for the production environment, it is nice to pre-build the graph before we get there. So we know there is a graph that we can start the new version of OTP with once we are deploying it. So for that purpose, we have a separate pipeline for what we call a graph builder candidate. And this pipeline we can roll out to production right away. We don't have to wait for anything, and we can build a new graph in production. It won't affect the journey planners in production, because when you start up the journey planner, it knows which serialization version ID it has itself, and it goes looking for that among the pre-built images of the graph. So there are actually several ways to do that. So I'm not even sure what we have done to do that, but there are several ways.
To select the version, you mean?
Yeah. So even the if you look at the eight first byte in the serialized graph, it contains the serialized version number. We are not using that, but that information exists there. Okay. So if the graphs doesn't match, we roll out the graph candidate to both testing and production, and we immediately start building new graphs. So it's available as soon as possible, and we can test and do our stuff in the normal pipeline. And when we are ready, we will roll out, and we know and we have the confidence that there will be a graph there. Okay, so this is our tool for building graphs and looking at what is the status. So you can see in the menu inside the red circle there that we can build both manually start base graph builds, which is the street graph, and the normal transit graph is the build graph. And we can do that for both the candidate and the others. But normally for the main pipeline, this is automatically. We can just also trigger this manually. Okay. This maybe. Okay, so this is our fork in at GitHub. So I wanted to show you a couple of things here. First of all, we have our own README file, and you can do this by putting a new README file in the .github folder. So if you fork OTP, you should really put a README file in that GitHub folder, so that is displayed instead of the one that is in OTP. It's a nice little thing. And you will never get conflicts since it's in a different place. And GitHub, he first looks, there is an order for where he looks for this README file. Okay, so at the top here, we can see what kind of version numbers of OTP that are in our different environments. And we also see the serialization version ID. That's the one start with EN and 019. And for the test environment, it is 0118. So this badge that you see here is really coming from OTP itself. So OTP generates this. This is new, and I will make a PR on this next week. And the reason why it's not showing for production is because this badge is not rolled out in our production environment. So that's a small new feature that's coming. Okay, so this is how our workflows look like. Let's see here. And let's get rid of this. I have a fight with the IT department, because we don't need to run Dependabot for OTP at Entur, because we don't have any changes to OTP our repository, we only have configuration. We use the upstream OTP as is. So we merge in dev 2.x and we apply some PRs, the one we have tagged with Entour test, and then we'll make the release. And this is done here in this workflow, and unfortunately I've not been able to include the version number here, so we can look at one of these. So this is the first step. Yeah, let's look at this first. So we can go here and we can run this, and if someone forgets to set the serialization version number, we can build again and bump the serialization version number. Yeah, after another nice feature here is that we produce a summary. It says the versioning information on top. It tells us which pull requests is merged in. So to do this, we have a release script, and that actually talks to GitHub to find out which PRs are tagged with Entour test, and it merges those in on top of the dev 2.1 branch. Then after it, it's built, it compares the current change log with the change log of the version that is in production. So we get this change log here, and as you can see, we haven't gone into production since May, so that's quite a few PRs that has merged since then. And it will also print a change log on the previous release, which was made yesterday. And since every developer is here, no PRs are merged since yesterday, so this is very short. Yeah, any questions to this? Or, yeah?
Okay, so so are you automatically producing a new Entour build every day?
Yeah, we are building a new OTP version and rolling it out into the test environment every night. So we do it every night because we didn't want it to do it for every PR that was merged. So that's why it's scheduled. But and then it leaves us for the whole day really undisturbed if there are any problems. We can look at this in the morning. Yeah. But this is the first step. Later on we want to move the entire workflow away from harness and over here and put also some system tests on top of this. Yeah, this second job here is not interesting. It's building the Docker image, and here we see the version number because it's triggered by new tags in our main branch. Okay. Yeah, how many are building their own versions of OTP with some custom changes on top? Yeah, okay, so this is relevant for you then. There is a script which is quite advanced. We use it. It is part of the mainstream OTP. It's not in our fork. It's up there, so you can use it. The first thing it does, it sets up and verify the branch, basically checks out the dev 2.x, and it gathers all the information it needs. So it issues some requests to GitHub, and it looks at the GitHub repository. Most of the information it gathers, it takes it directly from your local repository. It doesn't look at checked out code, which could lead to some problems. I'm gonna skip over this. If someone wants to try this out, contact me. The real difficult thing here is determine what is the next serialization version ID. That's quite complex. it's a lot more complex than you should think, because we are merging in pending PR, and those are not updated in the change log. So we have to determine if that PR that we merged in requires a new change to the change log or not, or to the services version ID. Yeah. If someone wants to talk, they can go outside. Sorry. Yes. So to make this generic, this script has a configuration file that you have to provide. So this is our configuration. It tells us what the upstream remote alias is. So this is how we map the OTP repo. It tells what the Entour repo is named. It tells where the release branch is. What suffix you want to use, no, prefix you want to use for the serialization version ID, what PR label you want to automatically merge in, and which extension branches you want to merge in. So we have all our configuration in the main config branch, and that's the branch we maintain. This main release branch is a clean synthetic branch. If you commit something to it, it will be overwritten in the next release. Yeah, and it also need to know where OTP is deployed to fetch the version information from OTP. I guess that's it.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you take questions?
Yeah, sure.
I have a question for Vincent.
Yep.
You briefly mentioned that there is some operational data that your data producers sent to you, but it's supposed to be hidden from the public.
Yeah, correct.
Presume, as far as I'm aware, not used in OTP either. What do you do with that information?
Okay, so it's not related to journey planning at all. It's about, so block data is for a given vehicle, how it's going to be used in a given day. So moving from one line to the other, one trip to the other. So you tie together a number of service journeys, and you match this with the vehicle ID, more or less. That's something that is very important for the operator itself, to optimize the fleet, basically. So they want to exchange that between the PTA and the PTO, for instance, but not through the public, because this information is also business secret, basically. So it's how you optimize your fleet. So you don't want to have this on the internet. So we have a different channel to publish this information, back an authentication portal.
Okay. So presumably they have to agree, so operator A has to agree for operator B to get the data, or?
They agree together, and we manage the authentication portal. Yeah.
Okay. So, in terms of the block ID, it is specified in GTFS standard, and then it is supposed to be a rider-facing information. So, why do you still need to take it out?
Because it's a different concept in NetX. The block in NetX is not the same as the GTFS block. This is something that is purely back-end information for the operators.
Yeah. So block information in GTFS is the same as interchanges in NetX. That's the same usage for OTP, at least. So it's totally different thing.
Okay, so the follow-up is that in the GTFS, a block ID is supposed to specify how a vehicle in the fleet run over an operational day. So isn't it that the same in NetX?
I don't know the block information in NetX, but I know that what it's used for, then you have to specify interchanges.
Okay.
So in GDFS, there's nowadays this way to transfer DXD to do this stacy that transfers. Previously, the block ID was used for that purpose, but it had also some other purposes.
Yeah, I guess.
It's similar to like this kind of operational thing.
That's true. So, but operational data isn't relevant for passenger planning, so it's not within scope of OTP. I know that we are passing stuff through OTP that are not passenger information, but yeah.
Jessica, again?
Yeah, a bit of a niche question for Vincent. You talked about that you want to improve your system by using more microservices. This is a very data-driven application, so you have to transfer the data from one service to the other.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Concept for that. Mm. That's
a challenge. So the existing system we use stores everything in one monolithic database for all Norway. It works, but it's like the way. What we want to do is to do a system that is file-based. So we move the NetX file along the pipeline, we modify it on the way, we validate it. We don't store it in a relational database, for instance. So it's a microservice without a database as a backend.
Okay, so right now you're using a database, and in the future you don't want to use a database anymore.
That's correct, yeah. Okay. The other reason that we had a database in the first place was to be able to modify the data on the fly. We don't do that anymore. We ask the operator to do it. The other reason was to have a GUI, to have a visual dashboard for navigating to the journey patterns, the stops, and so on. We don't use that anymore. We use the GraphQL API, which is also something that you can plug onto the, for instance, the OTP debug interface, which is as good as what we had before. So in the end, we don't need this database system anymore.
Yeah. And I guess we also have some of these services that don't need to read the entire NetX. They can read the parts they are interested in. So that speeds up those services as well. So.
Yeah.
So I saw on GitHub the National Stuff Repository stuff is in the back end and the front end for editing. Is any of the stuff for importing in there or no?
So you mean importing data into the national database?
Yeah. Where you have this pipeline that you rejected something.
Yeah, so stuff data is managed only by manual operations through the graphical interface. Initially, so 8 years ago, there was a massive Big Bang upload with like a ad hoc script to do that. We don't use it anymore. There is only one way to update the database, for the operators at least, is through the GUI by clicking manually on each stops. I think there is still an API to do that, to do like massive import. I'm not sure we use it apart from demos, for instance, but that's not something that is used in production.
No, but I meant the whole portal that you use for the portal for the operator to see the results of the representative thing, is that part of your proprietary thing, or do you publish like code for that as well as a protocol?
So I guess everything we make now is open source and public.
Yeah. Mm. All the components I presented, the whole pipeline is basically open source. Yeah. There's not a single component that is private.
So all of these components are made by our team?
As a matter of fact, yes. Everything is under our team.
Yeah, and I think our team is the default public, unless someone tells us not to. And I don't think we have many private. So. Mm. It's when some of the components that we are shared with other teams that originally was put private because no one was thinking that it should be put public, really. So we have to move them. And then there is a little bit of process to check that it doesn't contain any secrets.
I think most of our components have been reused by other organizations. So not any organization has used everything, but basically some organizations have picked up some components for their own needs.
So one more question in terms of importing data from other feeds, because they use do they all use just stop IDs and key IDs in the sources that you receive? Or do you have like a mapping? Because I saw on the stop registry there's a different tags, there's different IDs. I don't know if they're for this purpose or this
for historical reasons. So initially, again, like 8 years ago, the transition to the private stop IDs to the national stop IDs could not be done in one day. So we gave the operators some time to migrate to our IDs. So initially there was in NSR, in the database, a mapping, as you said, between the proprietary ID and the public ID. And then progressively the operators were able to move to the new IDs, and they don't use the private IDs anymore. They use it only for their own purpose in their own systems. So in theory, this mapping is not used at all for publishing information. So what we receive is always NETEX data that points to NSR ID, so national IDs.
Okay, so in the beginning, when the project started, before they all migrated, they would use their own IDs. You would have the national stop registry, and then it would be your responsibility to replace these stop IDs with the ones for
that's correct, and that was done in this internal database that we are still using, where we were doing this mapping of IDs. And then when publishing on the open data portal, we were publishing only the national ID.
I have a question on the planning tools. What kind of planning tools are used, or is Entour providing planning tools?
It's out of our scope. We just receive, we collect data, validate and publish. We have nothing to do with the actual planning. That's on the PTA side, PTO side.
And for the situation exchange or service alerts, what do the companies use to input this data?
They have their own feeds, actually. So we receive in OTP a feed with the Siri SX data. It's also part of the Nordic profile. So they have to provide it this way. So we manage only this type of information as a Siri SX.
Yeah. I don't know what I suspect, for example, Reuters to build their own SX.
Yeah, most likely. But when they exchange with us, they convert to Siri SX. Yeah. More questions?
Have been?
Yeah, hi. In this slide where you had the build pipeline with the graph reading and that stuff, is there a practical reason why you have different OTP build numbers in there?
Yeah, so here, I didn't say that. So at the bottom here you can see that OTP has a different versions number, but it has the same serialized number. So as long as the serialization number is the same, we don't care which OTP version that was building the graph. We do care, but as an illustration, it could be different numbers. So what happens when you roll out in production is that it takes an hour to produce the graphs because you need to build a street graph and a transit graph. And in that hour time slot, we build a candidate graph before we start rolling out. So it rolls out the graph builder and the journey planner without delay. The graph builder starts up, start being the street graph first and then the transit graph after, but the journey planner is also rolled out immediately. But that picks the graph that was previously built with a candidate. So at that moment, until the graph builder is done with the graph building, which takes a little bit more than an hour, in that period, we are actually using the serialized graph from the previous version of OTP. Or another version of OTP. It could be another version of OTP. Most likely it's the same version of OTP because we use this graph builder candidate.
So just to delay it, yeah.
Yeah.
But if there is a new feature that you care about, then in the...
Yeah, if so in the case I didn't go through, we have four different scenarios where you can roll out OTP. You have like a configuration change, then we don't, then it produces a new version of OTP because the configuration is in the GitHub repository, so we have to make a new version of OTP. But we don't care. If the graph should be compatible because there is no code changes, right? So you can roll out straight into production all the way, no problem. As long as OTP journey planner starts in dev and test, it's fine, we can roll out. And then we have hotfixes, which more or less the same, depending on what your hotfix is in the code. But if you're confident, you stop the process when it's in the test environment. You test that the hotfix that you applied is working, and then you roll out in the production. You don't do the graph building, and you wait for the graph builder to do its thing after that and update the graphs to the new version of OTP, but you roll out Journey Planner before using the old graphs. And then we have... manual releases we can do, and those are more complicated. And then it's the nightly release that we sometimes promote. But we usually do a lot of testing, and right now we have some blocking, unfortunately, some blocking bugs, so we can't roll out the latest Dev 2.x. But we have made production releases since May, but those are just bug fixes or configuration changes. There was another question.
The configuration changes is like the build JSON and
it could be disabling bike transfers, for example. That's one I recently did.
Thanks.
Because we had memory we had memory problems. We garbage collection went off. Yeah. Yeah.
Related to memory, out of curiosity, how much memory do you need to build the graph for the whole of Norway, and how much do you need for the, how much do you use, more or less, for an instance of OTP for the whole
graph? Graph building is about 20 gig. There's a small difference between building the street graph on the transit graph, but let's say 20 gig. On the OTP instance itself is a bit more. I think it's like 22 or 23 gig.
For the journey planner?
For the journey planner, yes.
Okay, so it's increased quite a bit.
It increased recently, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. I think like you're using elevation data, so the elevation